remember the song, The 12 Days of Christmas? So according to that song, yesterday your true love would have given you, anybody know? A partridge and a pear tree, and today they would have given you? Now, who knows why these gifts, right? It's sort of a bird theme, and then it switches to leaping, lords leaping, and maids a-milking, and all kinds of strange things. And I don't know why. I looked it up, and I think it just comes down to just a silly little tune, because it's the joy of Christmas. So why am I telling you about this? Well, it's because of this time period that we're in, the 12 days of Christmas. We don't really talk about that much anymore, but actually it's this period of time called Christmastide that is still a season of in and of itself, and really it's a season of giving, marked by Christmas Day, a day that we often exchange gifts, and Epiphany, the last of the 12-day period, which is also a day of giving gifts that we'll talk about in a little bit. So I want to talk primarily about two different ways of giving. They're not so different because spiritual giving is in everything, but just to look at these two from a couple different lenses. One is social giving and the other is spiritual giving. So what do they look like on the surface? And more importantly, what is underneath the surface of that impetus to give and what happens within us as we step into the process of giving, the wonderful opportunity to give. So as a community, we've been involved in social giving, especially during this season. So many of you purchased teddy bears. We had our, whole space here filled with teddy bears climbing up the ladder and homemade teddy bears as well as bought teddy bears. And all of those were given then to children who are in protective custody, moving into the foster care system or out of the foster care system or in between perhaps. And so that is a form of social giving. We also have, as you can see in our foyer still, these bins overflowing with warm items for people who are without shelter right now and people who are facing food insecurity. I think we filled three of those bins and we probably can go on to four or five quite easily. So thank you for your generosity. Yes. Yeah. So when we give in this way, it feels good, doesn't it? It feels good. It fills up our hearts to give in this way, to know that we are supporting somebody who is in need right now and able to do something out of our own abundance and our own sharing and our own generosity that says, I can make some difference. I can make a little dent or maybe even a huge gift in somebody's life, some experience of great gratitude that might come from that. Abraham Olagbegi is a young man who knows this feeling of the goodness of it so well. He's 13 years old, and one day he was out running around and playing, and when he came in, he told his mother his chest was hurting. A little bit later, he was taken to the hospital, and eventually he was diagnosed with a rare blood condition that can be fatal. For the next many months, Abraham went through chemotherapy and radiation, and finally he was given a life-saving bone marrow transplant. And the Make-A-Wish Foundation is an organization you've probably heard of before, that when children are in really difficult health situations, perhaps even fatal ones, that the Make-A-Wish Foundation offers them a wish that they'll grant. And so Abraham was offered three choices of a wish. And for a 13-year-old boy, they all sound pretty good. A trip to Disneyland, a PlayStation, or a 21-speed bike. Now, he was pretty excited about the PlayStation idea, and he was dreaming about that everyone in his family would get a PlayStation and that they could all, experience this together and what fun that would be. But when it came down to it, he changed his mind. And what changed his mind is he was starting to reflect on what he had been through. And he wanted something that gave a little more meaning to what he had been through. He wanted to be given something that was really touching his heart more deeply. And his greatest wish was to feed the homeless. And so he was granted that wish. And he was granted that wish in such a way that he is able to provide 700 plates for 8 months. Yeah. And I know, isn't that wonderful? He lives in Jackson, Mississippi, and they set him up with a program. It's called Abraham's Table. And so he staffs his table, and people come, and local businesses and local churches have gotten really excited about his story and have gifted more. So more is flowing in and flowing through at Abraham's Table. And so he had told USA Today that he likes to give because it makes him feel joyful. Oh, there he is on the left in his healing process and on the right at his table. He said that at his events, the attendees are dancing and singing and smiling. And he said, it just makes me feel good that they feel so good and that it warms his heart. So Abraham's advice, because he has this really special place in his heart for people who are without shelter, he says this regarding homeless people: before you put your nose in somebody's business, put your heart in their place first. Isn't that beautiful? Yeah. Which leads us to another aspect of giving, especially around this kind of idea of social giving, which is regard. How we regard the recipient of our gift is maybe just as important as the gift itself. That we regard in such a way that we are coming from the fullness and the wholeness consciousness of spirit rather than the consciousness of lack. See, the consciousness of lack would allow us to say that somehow this person maybe is broken or unwilling to help themselves or unable, or that we'd slap some kind of identity label on someone that they're a homeless person, and so as if that's their forever identity, right? Or they're a poor person. Instead of recognizing on the other side, when we step into the wholeness and the fullness consciousness of giving, we see that there are temporary conditions and situations that we all go through in our lives. There are ebbs and flows in the abundance of all of our lives, and there are times when we are more in need of support from another than others. So when we step into that bigger level of consciousness, we see the divine being. And we see the equality between us. And then it flows. Then the giving flows. There's no sort of hierarchical idea here. There's just an outpouring of the heart that says, here is my sibling that is in this moment in need. Instead of a homeless person, a person temporarily without shelter. Instead of a poor person, a person temporarily without the financial means. So when we shift that perception and drop the labels, something really magical happens. We begin to see the truth. This Christ spirit that we've been talking about during the Christmas season comes alive for us. We can see it more in each other, and we can see it more in ourselves. When we are able to open up, we open up to that more expansive way of knowing and seeing and feeling and experiencing and moving about the world. And then everything becomes more of a flow. Everything comes more into that sort of dancing, flowing energy that is this law of circulation, a key abundance teaching, a prosperity teacher that says, teaching that says, as I give, so I receive. I just keep doing this because it's that infinity symbol, right? It's breath, right? It's what we just did, breathe. We didn't plan that. Lisa didn't plan to sing breathe. It just comes, right? Because we start thinking about prosperity. And it's like, the giving and the receiving, the thing that we bring with us at all times, the thing that we can give to this person, the underlying consciousness that can be delivered is so powerful, maybe more so than even the physical gift. That doesn't mean if somebody's hungry, we shouldn't give them something to eat, or, you get that. So how can we not share our good when we step into this kind of way of being, right? Because when we fully step into it, then suddenly we know no stranger. Then suddenly everyone in the world, the humanity becomes our family. And everyone, whether they are a stranger or somebody close to us, is our sibling or our parent or our child. It puts a whole different perspective on things when we begin to see in this way and move about the world in this way and treat each other with the same kind of dignity that we would want for our own parents, for our own child, for our own sibling, for ourselves. So that's the beauty of shifting and recognizing that generosity is a lasting gift. It never ends, right? When we extend a generous interpretation to others by their actions and their words, we are giving them that kind of gift. When we extend that generosity to ourselves, when we suspend judgment, all of this is a giving. Tracy Lee LaRussa says, "Judge tenderly if you must." She said, "There is usually a side you haven't heard, a story you know nothing about, and a battle waged that you are not having to fight." I think we have a slide of that, John. So when you have caught yourself judging, or you're in maybe the process of judging, or maybe even better yet, you can catch yourself right before judging, you can remember these things, that there is usually a side you haven't heard, a story you know nothing about, and a battle waged that you are not having to fight. So when we catch ourselves, we can do a very simple practice. We can go, okay, judging's happening, right? It's like meditation, right? So, here comes judging. And then we can go, open it up. I don't know. And it drops the judgment, right? Because it comes out of the thinking we know. That's where the judgment comes, right? Thinking we know. And this whole game that the ego plays of puffing up so that we're better than, or diminishing so that we're smaller than. It's an exhausting game. So we can just step out of it and go, you know what? I'm not playing that game because I don't know. I don't know. I don't know that person's story. I don't know what's going on. So even if it's somebody, if it's your beloved, the closest person to you, you can't be inside of them. You don't know their emotional state. You don't know their full history. You don't know everything that's happened to them in this lifetime and maybe previous ones. You don't know what all they're carrying in their soul and their heart. We can't possibly know it all. We don't even know ourselves that well, right? How do we expect to know the people around us so well? So practicing this I don't know then automatically expands and opens us into that wonderful place called curiosity. I don't know. And it keeps us in that curious space of a willingness to engage in life and the freshness of the moment of life, and to engage then in the opportunity to give to ourselves, to give to others, to give to the moment, because we are open to it, right? If we're rushing around all the time and focused just on what we have to do and how we have to push through and how after we get in first in the line and we have to get ahead in the car, and you know, it's just like it's this constant, right, drive to for what? For what kind of self-important things do we need to get to that are so much more important than opening ourselves, our hearts, and our consciousness wide so that we can receive the breath of life, the breath of God that is breathing us and breathing those that are in front of us? How much we miss, right? How much we must miss in a day, in a lifetime, when we live in that driving kind of way. I am preaching to myself today. I don't know if any of you are getting anything out of it, but I'm listening. But this practice of I don't know, of opening, of curiosity, it can lead us to epiphany. What is epiphany? It's a moment of realization. It's an aha. It's an insight. It usually comes with inspiration, the idea of being in spirit. That word comes from that. So being in spirit, inspired, a moment of, oh, I get it, right? Something dawns on us. Suddenly we have an understanding. The light bulb goes off. We understand or we see something in someone else that we hadn't seen before. Or we see it in ourselves in a whole new way. And we say, wow, there's sort of that, that wonder that comes with Epiphany. Epiphany is also the day that the Magi came to bring Jesus gifts. So it was 12 days after his birth. And what caused that to happen was an epiphany. These three wise ones, these wise men were also astrologers who were following the night sky. They also were tuned to not only the cosmos, but to the spirit within. Magi in Persia means priest. So they were priestly figures who were aware, you know, very spiritually attuned. And that star represents our intuition. So they follow that bright star in the sky, yes, to go to the place, but also they were following within to go to this pull, this compelling kind of energy that was pulling them there. And they had a sense of some kind of spiritual breakthrough that is about to happen. Some kind of, you know, I don't know if this image works for you, but it's sort of the thing that comes to mind for me is, you know how sports teams sometimes have those hoops and the first player breaks through, like it can be paper or whatever, and then the rest of the team comes through and they all come out on the field or the court, you know what I'm talking about? And so it's kind of like that. It's like the first one to break through the portal, right? And Jesus was that, you know, he represented that. And so they had a sense like something like that's going to happen. There's a really important birth happening and there's some kind of new something happening. And so when one of us breaks through the consciousness to a whole new level, we open the way, we open up the portal for the whole team to come, for all of humanity to come through, right? And where are we coming through onto? We're coming onto the playing field. We're not in the stands judging that this guy or that guy isn't playing well or coaching well or umping well or all that stuff that goes on during the game, right? In the busyness of that egoic mind. We are now on the field. Let's see how we do on the field, right? And so it's a willingness to say, I'm in the game, God. I'm in the spiritual game. I'm willing to do the spiritual practice. I'm willing to engage in my life. I'm willing to be on the field. And maybe I'm even the one who's the first one on the field who breaks through that level of consciousness. How exciting that is in a life, not just a spiritual life, but in a lifetime, that we could have that kind of epiphany that would break through. And a whole new world could be born out of that. And so it's that kind of knowing that these wise men then had this sense, because they traveled a long way. So this wasn't just like sort of a passing thing, hey, let's go on a trip. It was like, we must go. We must go. Get the camels. It's time to go. Get the gifts. And so what were those gifts that they brought? They brought gold, right? Gold, which is a financial resource. They brought gold so that there could be an ease of financial resources, so there could even be wealth. And they brought with them frankincense, which was an incense that would be burned in the temples in spiritual ceremony. And it was a way of invoking spirit, of worshiping God, of giving thanks to the divine. And so there is a recognition that there is a divine birthing going on. There is a divine rebirthing going on. Something is happening in our world. Just like now. And then there is this gift of myrrh. And the myrrh was a healing ointment. And so that myrrh is used for healing. And what gifts could we think of that we could ever need besides financial resources, spiritual ceremony, and health? With those three, we have all that we ever could need. And by spiritual ceremony, I mean everything that goes with that, right? Spiritual recognition of that everything is really a spiritual ritual and ceremony once we really start living from this place. And the actual ceremonies that we do together and rituals that we do together in places like this where we gather. So all of that being essential to our well-being. And that's essentially what the wise men were bringing, were gifts for the well-being, yes, of Jesus, but of so much more, right? of the Christ in all of us, of the spirit of the divine, of the universal goodness that was coming forth, breaking through. So giving is a spiritual practice that is linked to epiphanies. When we give, it's a spiritual practice because we have epiphanies and that lead us to more epiphanies, realizations, recognitions, remembrances, insights, ahas, inspirations. So when we give spiritually, it's this practice that we have that is linked then to the flow of spiritual goodness and spiritual teachings and spiritual principles and all those things that buoy up our lives, that make our lives richer and better in every way. So a different Abraham knew this truth, right? The first Abraham we talked about, Oleg, I keep having to look at his name, Oleg Begi, the first young Abraham that we looked at, was a demonstration of social giving. And he is named after the biblical Abraham, who taught us spiritual giving. From his first action of tithing, in which he received the spoils of war, and he went to the high priest Melchizedek, and he gave 10%. And he gave 10% of that, as a tithe means a tenth. And it's a nice round multiplying number, right? So the idea is that we give 10% of what we receive to the places where we are spiritually fed, and the blessings come back tenfold. And so it's this practice of give and take, of law of circulation, of and Abraham represents faith. So he's always, you know, he's that. Representation that is our representation, right? Because that's what we call up inside of us when we give in such a way, when we tithe, when we keep our giving regular like that and engage in that kind of spiritual practice. So Abraham and his wife Sarah were blessed late in life with their son Isaac, and they also were blessed at the end, toward the end of their lives. They say that Abraham was 99, and I think Sarah was pretty close to the same age. And God gave them new names. So how would that mean for us? It would be like we got a recognition, right? An epiphany, a realization that, I have a new name now, right? We would receive that kind of guidance. And their new names had ha and ah in them. So Abraham used to be Abram, and he was given the ha in the middle of his name, which is the breath of God, the breath of life. And Sarah didn't have the H on the end of her name, but when that was added, it gave the ah. And so the breath of life, the very breath of the divine, was recognized in the changing of their names. Abraham, Sarah. And that is the gift that we are given, the recognition, the epiphany, the realization of this breath of life that we have, this giving and this receiving that is our abundant good. The life itself that we have been given is the gift. And it's easy to forget that, isn't it? Life gets hard, and then we go, we're just sort of like muddling through, right? Struggling. But if we can remember the breath, just that, if we can just sigh and release and let go, and it just automatically opens us again. It can start with the body, and then everything else follows. So as we today, like Abraham, still practice this practice called tithing, this giving of one-tenth, it's not just some archaic practice from the past. It's alive with the breath of God. And the only way to know it is to try it. You know, I could talk all day about it, but that won't make any difference to anyone unless they try it. And the process of trying, you know, like I've had people say, Unity's really simple. And it's like, okay, maybe simple. Maybe some of the ideas are simple on the surface to understand, but not always easy, right? it's the practice that we're about. It's that, yeah, we get the principles on an intellectual level, but they're not going to go anywhere until we put feet to them, until we try them ourselves, till we go through those moments of feeling the lack and the limitation and the fear and the anxiety of giving. And then we step out in faith and go, ah, let me give it. Let me see what happens. Let me take this as an experiment. That's what happened. My very first Unity class at Unity of Chicago was a tithing class that I took with my sister. And we went through all the great things about visioning and goals and all that. And then it comes down to this practice called tithing, right? And so you can feel the tension starting to sort of ripple through the room a little bit. But I stayed in that place of curiosity because I wanted to experiment with this. I was new to these principles and it was very exciting to me. And I believed the teachers. If it worked for them, I was going to try it. What did I have to lose? You know, so what if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. But I want to see what it feels like to get in this flow of giving and tithing in this practice. And so I was all for it. And I took out my checkbook and wrote my check and, you know, was ready for the basket to come around. And my sister was sitting next to me, and I looked over, and the whites of her fingers were like showing around the grip on her check. You know? And it looked like she was like completely holding her breath, you know, just like there was just a complete constriction. And I was like, Kay, it's okay. Just try it. We'll just try it. We'll just see how it goes. You know, just experiment. I'm trying to like talk her through it, right? The basket is coming and there she is, you know, like all poised. And I literally like took her hand and said, it's okay. Just let go. You know, just let go. And I think sometimes my sister's still sort of in that position, you know, and we've had some conversations over the years about it. And yet, I tried it and it worked for me. And what I mean by worked is not some sort of superstitious practice, but it worked to enter into that flow of spirit, to participate in the flow of the divine and the life breath of God through a material means, to be able to use money, finances, and time and talent and service and all those things to give of it and to experience then what does that feel like? What does it do to me? What does it do to my life? And it blows the doors open. That's what it does. It makes for a bigger opportunity. It allows us to step into possibility. But how will we ever know if we don't try? How will we ever know if we keep doing this? You know, and we can, you know, but God bless us when we're willing to try even in those kind of constricted, fearful, anxious places. So if a tenth is like, whoa, that is too much, and that's where some people, then some say, just start wherever. I had somebody tell me once years ago that she didn't tithe. She didn't give anything for like 10 years because she had been taught tithing. And she thought in order to give, you had to give 10%. And 10% was too much for her, so she gave nothing. So for 10 years, she didn't practice at all because she thought you have to hit the magic number of 10, a tenth, and therefore she wouldn't give anything. So I was like, ah, that's a little bit letter of the law and not spirit of the law, right? I mean, there is something about tithing and a tenth, I think, but we certainly don't stop our good or stop the flow by giving in whatever ways we give, right? So whatever that might be, it's financially, it's talent, it's service, it's time, it's all of these. It's social giving, it's spiritual giving, it's freely giving, it's frequently giving. It's all of this that allows us to participate in that flow. Luke says, give and it will be given to you. A good measure, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you give back. And I would add, and then some. And then some. And we don't know what that and then some is until we step in and try. So during these 12 days of Christmastide, I want to encourage us to recommit to the practice of giving in so many different ways that we can give, by tithing, by giving of our time, by giving socially, by just like open up the floodgates and give. As somebody once said, you cannot outgive God. It will always keep coming back around, right? I think that was Ernest Holmes, but I might be misquoting, so forgive me if so. but it's that idea sometimes there aren't words right, and I've said enough, so you know what I'm saying. To live in the spirit of generosity, this is the way that we can give. We can get into the spirit of giving. And when we do, we will be richly blessed. And people, you know, once we start doing this, the stories start coming in. Stories start flooding in. So please don't be shy about sharing your stories. I think we'll kind of prepare for some of that after the first of the year, that people can share their tithing stories and their abundance stories. Did you want to share something, Zula? Zula wants to share right now. All right, come on up. Do you want to come to the microphone?
Some of you know that I was homeless for a while, and some of you don't. But I received a lot of help from a lot of you, and I just wanted to say thank you. And I also want to honor Desmond Tutu. He you need to get the book.
The Book of Joy?
The Book of Joy, mm-hmm. The Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. If you haven't read it, please get that book. He was a very special man. Desmond Tutu was able to bring peace in ancient warring peoples, and he did it by seeing the dignity in all of the people. And we all have that same dignity. So regardless of color, regardless of religion or creed or whatever, that's all.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Zula. And the stories will continue to come, so let me know if you want to share, and we'll plan that after the first of the year. Well, let's bless this giving, this spirit of generosity, this living into the spirit of generosity, the giving, the free and frequent giving that richly blesses us in return. Let's say it together. I live in the spirit of generosity, giving freely and frequently, and I am blessed. So it is.